You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Janae Cummings.
We have great economic frustration that hits a lot of people, but I think this place that we call home also has great economic opportunity.
A city task force has delivered a report describing some of the local area's economic pain and making recommendations for what to do about it. More on that later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Dollars spent on in-classroom education declined last year in Indiana. That's according to new data for fiscal year 2015. Since 2006, the first year the state began collecting more detailed spending data, the percentage of overall education spending that actually goes to the classroom has dropped 3 percentage points from 60.6 to 57.7%. The classroom spending category is defined as teacher salaries and other direct educational support activities. The data shows several reasons why classroom spending has declined. Teacher salaries, on average, have remained flat over the last decade, with starting salary still hovering around $32,000 per year. In the early 2010s, the state saw a wave of teacher retirements, mostly among those at the top of the salary scale. Their replacements came in at the bottom of that scale, and many school corporations no longer negotiate for annual salary increases and have instead shifted to stipends and extra incentives, which can be more easily revoked. The state also passed laws restricting the right to collective bargaining for teachers, and many teachers now operate on contracts that must be renewed every year. Another reason is the growth in other categories of spending. While teacher salaries have been flat, salaries and hourly pay for other support staff have increased. That includes custodial workers, cafeteria staff, bus drivers, and others. Spending on school administrators is up, as well as food purchasing for school cafeterias. More money is also being spent on group health insurance. Classroom spending does not necessarily correlate with academic performance. Reporters from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette compared classroom spending data to the state's A through F school grading reports and found that half of the state's failing school corporations spent more in classrooms than the state average. Similarly, many of the state's A-rated schools put less money into classrooms than the average. The state's data contains no information regarding the $135 million that the state sends to private schools as part of the school voucher program. Private schools are exempt from the data reporting requirements placed on public schools.
The Building Trades Park in downtown Bloomington will be growing its northwest boundary. The Board of Public Works gave Operations Director Dave Williams permission to purchase property adjacent to the park in a meeting on Monday. Williams described the property.
This is a proposal to acquire a residential property located at the northwest corner of Building Trades Park, also known as 717 West Howe Street. We have a willing seller that contacted the department about a year ago, offering the property for sale as an addition to the park.
Williams said TIF funds would be used to complete the purchase, and demolition of the existing buildings would be completed in the spring. Williams said the city would like to control the street corner, though it has no plans to expand the park's facilities. Building Trades Park is one of the city's smaller parks and is located at 619 West Howe Street, across from Bloomington Hospital. The park contains a picnic shelter, a playground, basketball courts, and a quarter-mile trail that loops around the park.
The town of Ellettsville is moving ahead on raising its sewer rates. In their meeting on Monday, the town council agreed to hold public hearings on the proposed rate change in its January meetings. Council President Scott Oldham says most customers will see a decrease in their sewer rates. Jeff Farmer, the Wastewater Division Director, said the average household will see a reduction in their monthly bill of approximately $5. He says the same is not true for some other users.
As you get over 6,000 gallons, because the flow rate is going up due to the increased cost of treatment, the higher-end users will see somewhat of an increase.
Farmer said the average household uses almost 4,500 gallons of wastewater a month. The council reviewed a cost of service study done by H.G. Umbaugh and Associates in its November 28 meeting. Town Attorney Darla Brown said the town had not commissioned a cost of service study since 2008. Brown said the study purposes increasing the fee for new connections, also called a hook-on fee.
The hook-on fee, currently it's $1,500, and I think Mr. Baldessari had given a range, and so $2,000 is what I've put in there for a suggested change to the hook-on fee charge.
Doug, from the rate study, they determined that the appropriate hook-on fee, the capacity fee, if you will, would be $2,700 and some odd dollars. That would be the high end.
Farmer explained how he spends the capacity or the hook-on fee.
Capacity fee payments, they do not necessarily just set in a bank. And we utilize them. We have a fund, we have a line item where the capacity fees go. When we have a project where we know we can reduce I&I and upgrade our system, that money is utilized for that.
Farmer said the council would need to discuss how an increased hook-on fee would impact future growth in Ellettsville.
Monroe County Court-Appointed Special Advocates is calling for volunteers to be Court-Appointed Special Advocates, or CASAs, for youth going through the juvenile court system. In the December 9th meeting of the Monroe County Commissioners, CASA Board Member Jim Shelton said 38 CASAs are needed to serve 80 children who are waiting for advocates. Shelton reviewed the 2017 training dates for new CASAs.
We'll have four trainings next year. Two of them will be in the two intense weekend formats, where you would be there in class Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, then you'd have a weekend off and then do the same thing the next weekend. Those will be the formats for our winter training, which is the next training, starts February 10th, and for our summer training in July. Then the other format is Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings from 5:30 to 8. And those will be the formats for our spring training in May and our fall training in mid-October.
Shelton said applications for the February training will be due in mid-January. More details can be found at monroecountycasa.org. In other news, commissioners approved a contract to continue Purdue University Extension services for another year. County Extension Director Amy Thompson said the $111,000 contract covers a broad range of programs.
We provide educational programming and resources to people in four program areas. I cover agriculture and natural resources, our 4-H youth development program, health and human sciences, and then we also provide some community development programming.
Commissioners also approved a $120,000 award from the Indiana Department of Health for STD intervention services in Monroe and surrounding counties. Health Administrator Penny Cottle said the program will be expanding with the funding.
And in 2017, this will fund the expenses for two disease intervention specialists to follow up on gonorrhea, syphilis, HIV, chlamydia, various sexually transmitted diseases, and make sure that people are being treated appropriately and understand their infection, that partners are notified and such. So this will allow us to add a second full-time DIS.
Commissioners also approved a $50,000 agreement with the State Health Department for continued funding of the immunization program in Monroe County School Clinics. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Janae Cummings.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This week, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton's Wage Growth Task Force released a report following months of studying the local economy. WFHB News Director Joe Crawford has more in today's WFHB Community Report.
Here are some quick factual statements one might take away from the Wage Growth Task Force report. The manufacturing sector of Monroe County's economy is shrinking. In 2001, it made up 13.5% of all the jobs in the county. Now, it's 11%. During the past 15 years, the construction industry lost jobs, 384 jobs to be exact. There were also declines in professional and business service jobs. The service industry, on the other hand, is booming. There are nearly 3,300 more service-providing jobs in Monroe County now than there were a decade and a half ago. Most people who work in Monroe County, that's 58.5% to be exact, work in the service industry. Overall, the local economy has lost jobs since the beginning of the recession in 2007. As of last year, there were 483 fewer jobs in the area than there were 8 years prior. Wages at those jobs have just barely kept up with inflation. For an average Bloomington resident, real personal income is roughly what it was 7 years ago, maybe even a little less. That average, which takes into account not only wages, but also benefits, investment income, etc., was just less than $33,000 last year. Or, to put it more succinctly,
we have a poverty rate that's higher than other college towns our size. There's been a hollowing out of our workforce. Our wages are stagnant. We have to begin to reverse these trends.
That's Jane Martin, a venture capitalist who co-chaired Mayor John Hamilton's Wage Growth Task Force. She was speaking at a presentation on Monday. The 13-member task force spent months going over data and preparing recommendations for the city. The other co-chair of the task force, IU School of Public and Environmental Affairs professor David Odrech, says there are things the local government can do to, as Martin says, reverse these trends.
Our mandate was to proactively think about this community, like I think we think most communities in this country, have to be responsible for what's happening to us. We can't expect the federal government, state governments, the economy to take care of us. We have to figure out what's our strategy so that our standard of living goes up.
Odrech, Martin, and their fellow task force members have a list of initiatives they think the city should consider. For one thing, Martin says we should think about what's happened in recent years.
This is the first time in modern history that Bloomington and Monroe County hasn't recovered from the latest downturn. You know, we're flat to down. That's worrisome. And this is an economy that's pretty brutal going forward. And there's going to be winning communities and losing communities. And a lot of communities are going to get left behind. So, you know, it's easy to say, well, we have a 22-23% poverty rate, but that's really the struggling students. No. Our poverty rate is higher than other cities, college towns of our size. We've got a problem.
What to do about that problem, of course, is likely to be controversial. For example, the task force wants the city to focus on what's been widely and somewhat controversially called the skills gap. The idea, as discussed by the mayor's task force, is that there are theoretically tens of millions of high-paying jobs that go unfilled across the United States because there aren't enough trained workers to fill them. As Martin says, companies are increasingly deferring to the public and nonprofit sectors to train their workers.
Companies, when I was starting out in the 70s in business, used to take on training as a real serious part of their effort, of their investment in employees. Not so much anymore. They expect employees to sort of hit the deck running. And so the community, the city, and some of the institutions like the Community Foundation and great programs at Ivy Tech for skills gap training can really help us raise the level of employment and get folks gainfully and successfully employed.
But not all economists and not all researchers who've studied the skills gap agree with that assessment. A couple years ago, a study by the Boston Consulting Group found that there were only about 100,000 unfilled manufacturing jobs in the United States, and that there was overall enough skilled labor to fill the demand. liberal economists like Paul Krugman at the New York Times says the skills gap is basically a distraction from more effective measures that could improve the economy. For example, raising the minimum wage or strengthening organized labor, measures that are at least partly beyond the control of local government. The mayor's task force is also likely to encounter some disagreement about another of its assertions, that wage growth is impaired by the city's regulatory process. Here's Martin.
We felt that there's often roadblocks to companies expanding here or moving here. Regulatory roadblocks, expansion roadblocks. So we thought we need to change the culture here. Bloomington and Monroe County is going to grow, but we need to grow in the right way. We need to manage this growth. So the regulators need to figure out how to make things work.
The full report from the task force is even more forceful. It refers to huge time delays and huge costs to comply with regulations. The report calls out the City Plan Commission and the City Council in particular, ending its comment with, quote, "no one seems interested in any growth or expansion," unquote. Of course, as we regularly report during the Daily Local News, there are plenty of local residents who would assert the opposite. Many say that development projects are often passed through city government despite potential for harm to the community. Another suggestion from the task force is that the city of Bloomington seek to identify and understand what they call its brand. Here's Martin again.
We have to be more than just a great place to live. We have to stand for something. We have to have a story. So that's why our first initiative is branding. Branding Bloomington. Why would someone move here? Why would a California company open a satellite office in Indiana or in Bloomington? We have to be something.
The task force report refers to a recent study by an Indianapolis-based marketing firm, which identified characteristics of Bloomington's brand. Words used include progressive, academic, accepting, elevated, and hip. A possible brand, according to this report, is Bloomington, quote, is for idealists, unquote. Other recommendations include fostering what they call an innovation culture in Bloomington, as well as expanding early childhood education and forming a plan for small companies to offer competitive healthcare benefits. After the task force made its report, Mayor Hamilton thanked them for their work, and he made some closing remarks.
We have, yes, great economic frustration that hits a lot of people at different ways and different times. But I think this place that we call home also has great economic opportunity.
The recommendations within the task force's 18-page report are merely that, recommendations. It will be up to the mayor and other city officials to decide how and whether to implement them. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
You can find the full report from the mayor's wage growth task force at bloomington.in.gov.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially those with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at insccap.org.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Hello, Vera. No, that's not a Cockney meeting his girlfriend. Aloe vera, more formally Aloe barbadensis, is a medicinal plant. It's a succulent, and it grows best in hot climates. Texas and Mexico raise a lot of it. Its juices have been used for thousands of years to soothe burns and skin problems. 6,000-year-old carvings show the plant, and the ancient Egyptians called it the plant of immortality and chucked some in when they buried a pharaoh. Today, aloe vera sales are around $143 million a year in this country because it's a popular ingredient in skin lotions, soaps, ointments, sunblocks, and lots of other products. Or is it? Big store chains these days have house brand products that compete with established, highly advertised brands. Walmart, Target, and CVS pharmacies do, and all three have aloe vera gel available in a handy dispenser. Only thing is, there doesn't seem to be any aloe vera in it. Recently, Bloomberg News had a laboratory analyze Walmart's Equate Aloe After Sun Gel, Target's Up and Up Aloe Vera Gel with pure aloe vera, and CVS After Sun Aloe Vera Moisturizing Gel. The lab performed nuclear magnetic resonance tests, which identified all the various ingredients except aloe vera. They didn't even find chemical products from degraded aloe. Of course, these in-house label products are all made by a company which is happy to put its output into anybody's cute little containers, like Fruit of the Earth from Fort Worth, Texas, which made the gels for Walmart and Target, or Product Quest Manufacturing of Daytona Beach, Florida, which made CVS's product. Naturally, since the story broke, lawyers have been arising out of the goo like Night of the Living Dead and advancing from all sides. The manufacturers have made noises about unreliable tests, but any way you slice it, it seems to be well established that aloe vera forms a very, very small proportion of these supposedly highly infused products. It's worth noting that aloe vera powder goes for about $109 a pound these days, because it takes about 400 pounds of aloe vera leaves to make one. But maltodextrin powder looks a lot like it and only costs a few dollars a pound. And if you're wondering, yep, the laboratory found maltodextrin in all three products. The government doesn't regulate cosmetics and over-the-counter medications the way they do prescription drugs and food. But even when the Food and Drug Administration has full powers, some fraudsters still try to get away with things. A couple of years ago, grated Parmesan cheese was found to be largely imitation cheese and ground cellulose, wood fiber, and the FDA came down hard. The company that made it for national distribution, Castle Cheese, is bankrupt. But the FDA prioritizes health hazards, not fraud, so it's really up to us to be aware of bargains, especially when they seem too good to be true. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Joe Crawford.
Our engineers today are Heather Perry and Rob Schoon. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer, Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Janae Cummings. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2015 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.